Obviously, we know that the Megillas Esther is one of the few sovereign that will be learned even after Mashiach comes. The question, one of the questions that everyone asks is, well, why is it different? Another question is, it's the only mitzvah I know where it's a mitzvah to get drunk. Why is it a mitzvah to get drunk? What is unique to the Mace of Purim that would require something to do that ordinarily we shy away from? Achronim asked that question. It contravenes everything we learn about Yiddishkeit generally. There are two more questions that I have that I didn't see anywhere else. One is, when the Gemara in Megillah talk, I'm sure you know, there was a debate between Esther and Malka and the Talmidei Chachamim at the time was whether or not we should ever make Purim into a Yom Tov. Gemara Megillah says, Chachamim didn't want to. First they say to her, she says, Kabul Doris, make me into a Yom Tov. And the Chachamim say, that's all we need. They say, they're going to see what we did to them. And she says, they know it anyways. It's written in the annals of the local kingdoms. You have to treat a machlokas, Esther Malka, and the Sanhedrin at the time, as like a machlokas to Noyim or greater. What did each side hold? What was the machlokas about? You look in Rashi, in Gemara and Megillah, Dav Zayin, Rashi says the following. It's very unusual. I've never seen a Rashi quite like this. Rashi says the following. It's just a few words. I'll read it to you. Rashi says, when Esther Malka says to the Chacham Kavum Ledoros, Rashi says, Liyontav, make me into a Liyontav. And to read the Megillah, Leos Li L'Shem, it should be for me a name. What does that mean? We're looking for personal immortalization? I don't think so, right? It's not our Ashkenazi. Gedolei Yisrael never looked for personal legacy. So what is Pshat in that Rashi? I looked everywhere I could find. I have not seen anyone be Mazen with this Rashi. I would like to try to be Mazen with this Rashi. And the fourth issue that comes to mind is a pshat that the Megillah says in the Gemara Chulin. Sure, you've all heard of the Gemara. The Gemara Chulin Kuf Lamed Tes says, Esther min HaTorah Minayim. Sound familiar, Rebbe? Esther min HaTorah Minayim.
We
can't. The Sivanochi Hasti Asti Upon Adiyam Alu. The end of Dvarim, and the Kaddish Baruch Hu says, as part of the Onish of Yisrael, the Kaddish Baruch Hu will hide his eyes. They'll hide from us. It will take effort to see God's presence, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence in the world. Throughout much of our history, when the Jewish people were in Eretz Israel, the evidence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's providence was clear. The Nisim Kol Yom and the Beis HaMikdash Rishon. But when the Jews went into Galus, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will hide his eyes. So the Gemara says, how do you know about Esther? And the Vilna says, how do you know that the Hashgach of Hashem will be as expressed in history by Esther, even during Galus? That was the Gemara's kasha in Chulin, because it exists. And what else could it be? The Gemara never asked, where do you know, to see Daniel in the Torah? Where do you see a remnant for Yeshai in the Torah? Where do you see a remnant for Yehoshua and Yechez? It doesn't ask about any other Gedolei Yisrael in the Nevi'im. Why does it ask particularly about Esther? So the question you learn, the learns must be the Gemara's asking, where do you see the Hashkocha? Now, because Baruch gives us such Hashkocha even when we don't seem to be under his care. So I had a kasha in this kasha in the Vilna Gaon, or this pshat of the Vilna Gaon. You think about it, you have to ask yourself the following question. The Gemara Chulin was put down hundreds of years after the Nes Hanukkah, Nes Purim, right? So the Gemara is asking, where do we need a remnant for Hashgacha? You lived it. We saw it. It's part of Jewish history. Why do I need a remnant in the Torah for something that I saw with my own eyes? Feel free to interrupt with a suggestion, Kevin. I don't have a problem with that. You know, that's our Derech HaLivut, right? You have a chat, feel free to call it out. I can't say, what is another guy talking about? The Gemara Chulin has to ask, how do I have a remnant for something that I saw with my own eyes? Even Svara, the Gemara always says, Svara, you'll probably cry. I don't need a pasuk if I have a Svara. I certainly don't need a remnant for something that I experienced as a nation. I'm very puzzled by this Vilna Gaon. So I thought we'd spend a few minutes in looking through some of the psukim and Megillah and see if we can answer these questions. Megillah starts with Vayigvei Melech Ahasuerus. You know, all you know, the Medrash and the Drashim say that he is the language of Oyvei. It was a tzara. Because Ahasuerus is in history, is one of the only three kings that ruled the entire known world. And if you study Jewish history, you know that it is the only time that the entire nation was under one domain. What saved Klal Yisrael through 2,000 years of torturous experiences with one of the Gaim was the fact that never were we under the thumb of one Russia. Always. If England expelled us, France took us in. If France expelled us, England took us in. If Spain expelled us, the Netherlands took us in. Or the North Africa, the Moroccans took us in. In Portugal, expenses, we went to Italy, the Italian city-states. All Jewish history is about running from one country to another. Never were we under one Russia's thumb. But in the time of Purim, we were. It was the only time of Purim, which made the danger far greater than it would have otherwise have been, because all of Klal Yisrael was under one nation. And then the Gemara says, the Pasuk said, the Melech asked, what do you have to tell me? What, he's sitting on the throne. Kings generally sit on thrones. That's how it used to be. We don't have that today. The kings, at least not in the Western democracies. What do you have to tell me sitting on the throne? So the Vilna Gaon explains, well, you know why we're sitting on the throne? The Torah tells us that. It has to be written in the Megillah. Because the throne that Ahasuerus sat on was a replica of the throne of Shlomo HaMelech. Let's review the history. Remember, you know that Nebuchadnezzar was the one, the king of Babel, was the one who captured Shalayim, and he destroyed the Beis HaMikdash Rishon. He reigned for 45 years. Then his son Evil-Merodach took over for 23 years. Then his grandson Belshazzar took over. Everyone knew about the Nevuah of Yirmiyahu and Rabbi. Yirmiyahu and Rabbi was a world figure. And everyone knew, because the Jewish nation was a tremendously powerful state. And everyone knew that Yirmiyahu and Rabbi said that the Golus will not last more than 70 years. And they took it seriously. Belshazzar figured out when those 70 years would be. And he made a chesed. And as soon as he realized Yirmiyahu must be wrong, because 70 years had passed, he made a party. And they took out of the cave of the Beis HaMikdash. And that night, because of that event, he died. Ahasuerus was really a peasant. He married, depending on which the Yalkut or the Gemara, he married the granddaughter, or Vashti was either granddaughter or great-granddaughter of Nebuchadnezzar. And that was his claim to be the Melech. And he, the Gemara Megillah explains, he made a chesed, he got it wrong. He counted from the wrong place. We knew 70 years, he got no way to start the 70 years. And he counted, he says, Belshazzar died because he got it wrong. But I'm gonna get it right. And he made a chesed, and he made a chesed that it came out, and it came out in the third year of his reign. What role did the throne play? Because after Nebuchadnezzar captured Yerushalayim, the throne of Shlomo HaMelech was the enemy of the world. If you ever have a chance, you look in the Pirush of the Ben Yoyada, how it explains the intricacies and the mechanical elements that went into the extraordinarily large and heavy throne of Shlomo HaMelech, and it was the enemy of the world. They wanted to copy it. The most powerful nation in the world wanted to copy it, wanted to bring it to their capital so that their kings could sit on it. But it was too heavy. They had nothing that could carry it. So what did they decide to do? They decided to make a copy. Unfortunately for them, their government was in Nineveh. The capital of Babylon was in Nineveh. But the people who could have the skills to make the copy lived in Shushan. So they made a copy of the throne of Shlomo HaMelech, but it had to be in Shushan, because again, it was too heavy to move to Nineveh. So they actually moved the seat of government from Nineveh to Shushan. Now you ask yourself a question, why did all this happen? The only God explains, you know why? Because Mordechai Yehudi lived there. And therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu arranged that the artisans who could duplicate the Kisei HaKavod of Shlomo Melech, the throne, would be there, preparing the way for the Yeshua of Klal Yisrael. That's why the throne of government of the Achshavosh had moved to Shushan. That's why the Pesuk has to tell me that it was in Shushan Abira his throne. And why was Shushan Abira? Because that was the Yeshua was going to come from. In any event, Shlomo HaMelech, after Shlomo HaMelech's throne was copied, when Ahasuerus made the cheshbon, he made the cheshbon, he says, okay, Baruch Hashem, it's 3 years into my reign, and now for sure, the Nevuah of Yirmiyahu has been disproven, and Baruch Hashem is safe to use the Klekovnish of the Beis Hamikdash. And that was the famous part that you all know about, that he invited everyone in his kingdom to join in. And if you didn't join, you might have been considered a renegade or a rebel, and your life might have been in danger. So all Klal Yisrael joined in. Now this is a tremendous change for two reasons. Using the Klei Kodesh is an Isser, and to celebrate the disproof of the Nevuah of Yirmiyahu HaNavi, it's even a greater event. Because then Klal Yisrael wouldn't come back from Golus, and you're joining in that party. But why did Ahasuerus make this party? It wasn't just to celebrate the fact that Yirmiyahu was wrong. He had a larger reason. Remember, he was a peasant. If you study politics or international relations, you understand that in every government there are different factions. Vashti HaMalka was the descendant of royalty. Many of the people in the country were loyal to her. Ahasuerus came, he was originally a stable boy. He became great because of who he married. He had to shore up allegiance to him. How do you do that? In the real world, how do you do the Hebrew? You do it with money. People respect money. Power is about money. A rich guy loses his money, he loses all of his friends. You probably know that. So Ahasuerus needed to shore up his political support to make sure he can maintain the throne, and he makes this tremendous party. Vashti decides she's also going to make a party. There was no good reason for that. No one got any points out. No reason for him to make a party. Why should you make a party? He had a real reason for making a party. Show his vast storehouses money impresses people. Yo, look at that. Maybe I'll get some. But Vashti, she had no reason. But had she not made that party, she wouldn't have been there at the time that Ahasuerus asked her to come to his party in a way that made her uncomfortable. And the entire story of her execution would not have happened. That was all a scuffle. That it should happen that way. But you understand now, if you understand these problems with this party, you will understand her refusal to listen to her husband wasn't just a personal attack and embarrassment of the king. It undercut his entire reason for making the party. Here he is, the king makes the party, show he's powerful, and you better watch out for him, you have to have allegiance to him, and his own wife, who represents the royal faction of the family, ignores him and disobeys him. It undercuts his entire reason for the party. Now, if you're Ahasuerus, what do you do? He didn't really want to kill her. It wasn't even an initial kill her, because if he kills Vashti, he loses his claim to the throne. She's the descendant of royalty, not him. But he's in a pickle. So he figures he goes to his advisors. Every, you probably know this instinctually. When a powerful person asks his advisors around them for advice, what do you think happens? They smell which way the wind is blowing, and they let him do what they tell him, what he thinks he wants to hear, what they think he wants to hear, right? They understood he wanted to hear. In fact, the language, the girl points out, language that he uses, he says, what should we do with the Malka Vashti? Someone you want to kill, they don't call a queen. The Malka Vashti, he makes point. She's a Malka. And she's also his claim to the throne. Right. So they understood. Now, even in an absolute monarchy, where a person is in, has tremendous power, it's never absolute, never totally absolute. And the ruling in Horus at that point was, a king has absolute authority, but not if it's a personal question. You have the right to execute someone if it's a rebellion, if it's, you're a traitor to the country. What if you're not a traitor to the country? What if it's a very personal issue? The king has no right to do that. Haman understood that, and Haman had his own agenda. Haman had two agendas. One is, he had a wife who was also from high stature, and he didn't like her. He wanted to get rid of her. Not so easy to get rid of someone who's more powerful than you. So he turned the question not into a personal insult from the queen to the king. He turned it into a question of an attack on all men who live in the country of Paras. If that's true, it's an attack on the sovereign, the advisors. If the advisors can't give advice, what do you do with no advice? Then the king has to step in. He forced Haman's hand. And that was great Ashkaka. Because had he not forced Haman's hand, Haman, when he is seen with the Apachol, thinks he's trying to cajole the queen, take advantage of the queen, Ahasuerus summarily executes him. He could never have done that. It's personal. Haman changed the law in Paris and had the law changed, which allowed the king to kill Vashti and judge all issues, personal or not. That's what allowed Haman to be executed. And how did that happen? The Haskalah was not just that Haman had a bad wife. Why did he have a bad wife? And why did he give this advice? You know, when you work as a reporter for a newspaper, you try to assign cause and effect, and it's not always easy. For instance, this hate that Chalal Yisrael did, they ate at the party that Akshay is through. It happened the full 9 years before the rise of Haman. No one at that point related the rise of Haman to the hate of the Mishnah. No one. It takes Chazal to see that. It takes Ruach HaKodesh to see that. And not only that, but this is the same party where Vashti was, as a result of this, Vashti was executed. That was during the point Yalshev Mehetz, while the Klal Yisrael was doing the chait of participating in the party, the Yeshua was prepared for that. When you try to ascribe cause and effect, you try to see what this logically can, but that's not how Klal Yisrael works. That's how the world works. The world works doesn't based on political cause and effect. It works by a Ashkafas of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And if you study the events in your own, how would you see it? Baruch Hashem, it was coincidental, and it worked, and we were lucky. That's not how Chazal see it. Not only how Chazal see it that way, the entire visa part was to give it a party was HaKadosh Baruch Hu put that in her head. When you read the Megillah, you think, oh boy, were we lucky, Baruch Hashem, Bigson and Sarish plotted against the king, and Baruch Hashem, Mordechai was fortunate enough to overhear them because he understood so many languages. That I learned. That's not how the Gro learns. The Gro learns that the reason Bigson and Sarish plotted against the king was so that the Kadosh made that so that Mordechai could hear them and then ingratiate himself with the king. It's reversed. You have to understand what is the Siva Sadover. Nobody looks at the world this way. One of the aversions traditionally that the Frum community has against Jewish history is that if the Jewish historians, even the Frum ones, attempt to explain events by cause and effect from a political or historical perspective. That's not how we understand Jewish history. It's the Ruchni Shiva that causes everything. That is, I think, how the Vilna Gaon learns Pshat in the Gemara and Chulin. Cause and effect, yes, we can see we were lucky, but no one thinks, you know, the entire revolution of Bigson and Sarish was planted by Kadosh Baruch Hu so that Mordechai could overhear. The entire party of Vashti was done so that she would be there and be executed. He was the granddaughter or great granddaughter Nebuchadnezzar. She was the one who refused to allow Koresh to allow the Jews to rebuild the Beis Hamikdash. She said, look, that's my father and my grandfather's great work. You're going to destroy it? Knocking out the Jews was his major accomplishment. No one sees that all these events are all because of the centrality of Klal Yisrael. The world is very different than what it seems. And the Chiddush, the Gemara says in the Gemara in Chulin, is where do you see that the correct interpretation of our events, of our history, is the way Esther Malka does it. Let me go one step further. None of you were old enough to remember the rescue in Uganda and in Tepe. Any of you ever know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
In 1976, the Palestinian Liberation Organization kidnapped a plane. They hijacked a plane. And they land in the country of Uganda, which was then ridden by a Russian Idi Amin. It was an Air Paris jet, and for day after day, they let all the passengers go, except for the Jewish passengers, the Israeli passengers. The brave French captain of the plane refused to leave with the rest of the guy, and he stayed with the Jews. Israel launched an operation that went 1,500 miles in the dead of the night on two planes, landed on their runway in the middle of the night, and performed, without question, the most spectacular rescue in all world history. Everyone was rescued, one or two people were injured, and the only person who died was Benjamin Netanyahu's older brother, Yonason, who led the rescue. Reb Moshe Feinstein, from the Brachit, in his Shabbos and Shubas and Kosh Mishpat, the Chelik Dalin, said it was an ace goli. Not an ace nisto, an ace goli, because the odds of that going correctly were, it was not just unlikely, it was impossible. That's an ace goli. The same thing coming, you know, we had recently in our time. When in the last Gaza war, could you imagine the leadership of Hamas planning with their missiles to do what they were planning to do to Tel Aviv? The tens of thousands, and I'm not exaggerating, of casualties we would have had, but one Jew had an idea that nobody thought was possible. No one thought it was possible. The American government and the military said that cannot be done. He persisted against all odds, and he created something called the Iron Dome. No country in the world had it. The tiny little Israel had it, and it was not possible by the best experts in the world. It was Baruch Hashem in time, right in time. The refuah was there by the time of the Makkah. That's a nice call, in my opinion. Certainly, it was at least as great as nice as intended. The building of Shad, in my opinion, and what the Gemara Chulin is, how do you see that the interpretation of Esther Malka, that the events of Purim were not just an ace system, was an ace government, and that everything happened because of what happened. And you have to look not at the event or the coincidence of Baruch Hashem, we were there, everything from soup to nuts was a result of the Kodesh Baruch Hu's Hashkafa. That's the Gemara's remnants from Hashkafa. There is an ace government. And that's why we need anybody Moshe Mashiach. Because Moshe Mashiach is a time of Nisim Kalim. And a hidden ace, we won't celebrate, but an ace color we will, and Purim will be read then. And then coming back to Rashi, Pirush Rashi, when Rashi says, "Kol Bumi Leyotav Nekros Lekrayo Lelos Leshayim," the Musa Haskel of the Megillas Esther is to teach us how to look at the world. Cover. When you read the papers and you see events in the on a national scene, also on a personal life, you have to look further. Yes, I was lucky, and this happened, but why this beginning? Go back, and why did that happen? Why did that happen? You have to look back, because very little of this world is the way it appears. The reality is almost nothing of this world. The physical, if you study physics, you'll know that the physical world is not what it seems to be. In fact, at its very core, it's all worthless. I saw it first in the Alto Slobodka, and I'm reading it now in modern physics. There's nothing. You see the wall next to you, look around, heaven. It's almost all nothing. Not just air, nothing. The space, if you were to take one of those trillions of atoms and enlarge it to the size of an orange, the space between it and its atoms and surrounding it, you know how long or far it would be? 4 miles. You'll never look at the wall the same way again. And the guy sitting next to you, sorry to disappoint you, Kevin, but you're nothing but energy in a different form. Please do not poke your friend because your hand will not go through him. Right? The reality is not what it seems, Kevin. The tefillahs of Kol Yisrael and the schusim are what allow the Jew to function. That's the Moshe Haskel of Esther Malkut. And I think I saw the Pirush of Yad HaFivri, Ryan Zalman Margolius, this Pirush of Shulchan Aruch says, he had a dream. He's trying to say, why do you have to drink? He says, because Yayin is Samech Levav Enosh. Because you can't appreciate Nais if you're not happy. And why makes you happy? So what do you mean you can't appreciate Nais if you're not happy? And if you learn like I'm saying, I think you'll understand. Because we're all in depression, even you young men, you're not married. I think most of you are not married yet. You're not married yet. You're not married ready. Okay, so the tears in life get more and more. And even as a young man, you have plenty of tears. But the reality is those tears stop you from sitting back and saying, what is really going on? You have to take a good stiff drink, look at the world and understand that what you see is not what is really there. And only if you can remove yourself from the nonsensical things that deter us, take a really deep look at the world, you'll understand. The world is not what it seems to be, and you'll see relationships and transbonus and nisim all around. The world is an illusion, everything about it, physical, the spiritual, and it's the job of us to see through the veil. The contribution of Esther Malkut and what she meant, Kabuni, the Yos, leave the shame, that this was a hospital, have a look at the world. Her fight was, this should be the Dori Doris, the Kalali Show. And she won the fight. And Chaim Shalom explained, she won the fight because ultimately the person who's the Baal HaChrayis sees things best, and she was the Baal HaChrayis. And have a good day, Kevin. Enjoy your term. That's the show.
Any questions? Nobody interrupted me. I'm not used to some time.
Is there nowadays we're not so into touching up exactly why things happen, because obviously we don't know why things happen. You can't specifically say that anything happened for specific reasons. So is there like a practical way of using that tachbula in our everyday lives type of thing? Because the mice, we can't.
I actually think there is. It's not always understood, but I know I once heard that the Chafetz Chaim's Zichrono Lebracha once said he saw Nebuch a person, a really oppressed almana, Rachman Islam. And he always wondered what would happen. And 50 years later, he saw this person suffer a Misa Mishuna. And he understood, he related the two. You might, in the small, not always see it. But if you keep your eyes open, you will find that if you try to do the right thing, things sort of open up to you. It's an amazing thing. I've seen that in my own life. I've seen that in Chaver. When he saw one person, he was looking for something, and it wouldn't be good for him. And, Kodesh Baruch Hu didn't go that way. You keep your eyes open. I really think very well, but not always, and not every detail, but the core events of our life are shaped to allow us to grow ruchnius. And if you keep your eyes open and you try, one of the biggest sodas, both in learning and life, is endless. You have to be honest with yourself. Most of us come with tremendous subjective thoughts. You'll never, for instance, my son-in-law, Rav Meishi Winter in St. Louis, told me that when he became a Rav, Rabbi First, out in the Midwest, told me there's six words you got to know if you want to be a good rabbi. You have to say after, I don't know, and I was wrong. You never become alarmed if you can't say I don't know or I know was wrong. So the emes of your insides allow you to see the world in a very different way than if you're not honest with yourself. Because you have negiyas, you have to get rid of the negiyas. That's part of the Musa, the Nashkaf, the Yeshiva. You study Musa, you become a Baal Emes, then you see you can attribute the events that you do, you will see, in my opinion, you will see. Not always, but you will certainly get a much better handle on the events that shape your life. I don't know that everyone would agree with me, but it's been my experience to see it that way. I hope that answers your question. Thank you. All right, everybody, have a good luck in your learning, and have a wonderful Purim.